AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio, your home for news talk and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Over 37,000 people are confirmed dead after last week's earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. But as CBS's MTS Taieb reports,
there are still moments of extraordinary hope, like when this 13-year-old boy was rescued from the rubble 182 hours after the quake first struck.
More from CBS's Cammie McCormick.
Even with the recoveries, the hopes of finding survivors is fading fast. The UN's Martin Griffiths.
That's coming to a close. And now the humanitarian phase, the urgency of providing shelter, food, and a sense of the future for these people. That's our obligation now.
Griffiths was in Aleppo, Syria, where they're still struggling to get aid in.
Four flying objects have been shot down since February 4th, three of them since Friday over Alaska, Canada, and Lake Huron. CBS's Nancy Korda spoke to National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
How big was it?
We're still trying to assess what that was.
That won't be easy until debris from this weekend's objects can be recovered.
After the spy balloon incident about a week ago, the nation's radar system was adjusted to make it more sensitive. And officials say that's a big part of the reason that they're now detecting more objects. But what lawmakers want to know is what the criteria is that President Biden is going to use for deciding when to shoot objects down now that the U.S. is detecting so many more of them.
Eight people, including a police officer, are injured in a crash in Brooklyn, New York. Authorities say the driver of a U-Haul truck intentionally drove off the road and struck pedestrians. This man was working in the area at the time.
We just heard a whole commotion happening. We heard a whole noise, a whole bang, U-Haul truck coming down the block. So we see that it has something under the car and everybody's yelling out for the truck, the U-Haul truck to stop, and he wouldn't stop.
A suspect is in custody. A new report from the CDC shows a worsening gap in the mental health between teenagers. CBS's Alexander Tin.
Nearly one in three teen girls have seriously considered attempting suicide. That's up from less than one in five a decade ago, and nearly double the rate of teen boys who have considered suicide. The CDC survey also found other worrying trends over the past decade in teen girls, including an increase in sexual violence and substance use.
A judge in Georgia ordered that parts of a special grand jury report investigating efforts by former President Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election be released later this week. CBS's Graham Cates.
Robert McBurney, the judge, ruled that most of the report could remain undisclosed while the Fulton County District Attorney's Office continues its investigation, but said that the introduction, conclusion, and a section in which the grand jury discusses its concern that some of the witnesses it interviewed may have lied under oath should all be released.
This is CBS News.
For adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy, now there's Skyrizi, risankizumab riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection. With Skyrizi, 3 out of 4 people achieve 90% clear skin at 4 months, and Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Nothing in me go hand in hand. Nothing on my skin, that's my new place.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
With Skyrizi, you could achieve 90% clearer skin. Ask your doctor about the number one dermatologist prescribed biologic in psoriasis and visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
A Super Bowl surprise from...
It makes me smile and you have a piano, but if you can play the Peanuts theme song.
Oh, oh my gosh.
You know he can.
Yes.
On the Devil's Radio.
Sync Radio, Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As you go about your daily life, look closer.
As you gather with family and friends, look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So, look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Lows around 30 tonight under clear skies, southerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow, scattered rain showers likely, high temperatures reach up to 49. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow night, lows level off around 37, cloudy skies expected. About an inch of snow Thursday.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
Currently, it's 32.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Brothers, sisters, working class heroes, this is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Well, the cons have finally found East Palestine, Ohio on the map. And Gun Fetish Barbie, Lauren Boebert, tweeted out that Pete Buttigieg finally emerged today. Not a single comment about the train crash in Ohio. Instead, he bemoaned the whiteness of the construction industry. It's a miracle this country is able to function under this regime. And look, you know, here's the weird thing. The outrage machine on the right has finally found out, hey, there was something going on over there. Hey, some big, giant plumes of smoke and stuff, lots of it. And again, you know, it's interesting that the people who are responsible for this, in my view, are the ones who were silent the entire time until now the outrage machine goes, oh, Pete Buttigieg didn't mention it. Now let's attack Buttigieg and Biden and all of them. And look, there's a lot of attacks to go around. Now, what's interesting, while she's attacking the guy who's the head of the Department of Transportation, didn't mention the fact that the guy who was the congressional representative in that area, Republican Bill Johnson, chair of the House Committee on the Subcommittee on Environment, Manufacturing, and Critical Materials, environment kind of there, not a peep until the outrage machine said, hey, over here. And a couple hours ago, finally, a miraculous statement, and going to be on with the Hannitys, and now he's got his shot. This is his shot to be somebody. Now he does say something. The thing is, I've been asking why this hasn't been front page news for the last week. Well, since it happened, five giant cars carrying 40,000 gallons of this vinyl chloride. This is, honestly, this is one of the largest ecological disasters in this country's history. I mean, this is they're saying, it's being reported that 100,000 gallons of this stuff, or 1 million pounds of this vinyl chloride has either been leaked, spilled, or burned. And there are people in the area reporting their cars and their houses and everything covered with acid rain and phosgene and all of this stuff. That, you know, not great for you. Not good for you. In fact, I looked up phosgene. Phosgene is a poisonous gas. So if you're breathing this stuff in, not good for you. And you look at the pictures of the people, the cleanup crew, I'm not seeing the kind of safety precautions that I would like to see. Now, the hydrogen chloride that comes out of this, because it's been reported that obviously this burning of this stuff and all this stuff produces hydrogen chloride, not good for the nose, skin, eyes, throat, larynx, all that stuff. It's kind of bad for you. All of it bad for you. And no reporting. And yet last week you had a guy, I think it was Wednesday, a reporter had the audacity to ask a question during the DeWine press conference. They arrested him for the crime of, yes, speaking while the DeWine was speaking. And there's been no real attention. And we've been talking about it. Last week we had Jared Cassidy on from the Smart Union saying, hey, what's going on there? Finally. And again, the outrage machine, this isn't about finding out what went wrong. This isn't about helping the people on the ground. This isn't about making sure it doesn't happen again. This is about just outrage. This is about being mad at Pete Buttigieg. Now, I find it interesting that the mayor of the town, a guy named Trent Conaway, he's been quoted as saying, this isn't going to get swept under the rug. Not going to happen. I'm not going to be the country bumpkin that gets talked over by a big corporation. We're going to hold their feet to the fire. They're going to do what they say they're going to do, and they're going to protect the people of this town. No, they're not. I think the last person in the room who knows that, no, they're not. Because, again, this wasn't allowed to get out. This wasn't front page news everywhere. This wasn't the story of them. We were too busy talking about stoves and balloons. Someone tweeted, Joe Biden issued an executive order to derail the train to get us off of talking about balloons. I mean, that's how crazy things have gotten. And the thing that bothers me is when you throw out a comment of going, hey, this is wrong. We should be dealing with the situation. It immediately, especially on the right, becomes, well, you're blaming Donald Trump for this. And you go, no, there's blame there. During the Trump years, he did roll back a lot of regulations on this industry. This is the central tenet of conservative ideology. This is what the Republicans have been fighting for decades. This idea that you're going to allow corporate America to self-police themselves. This idea that corporate America will do what's in their best interest. And that then that will then protect from the rest of us. No, that's not how it happens. They do what's in their best interest, their bottom line best interest. Because they know we're never going to hold them accountable. Right now, as we speak, it's being reported that the railroad, Norfolk Southern, is out there. How did they put it? Was it offering $1,000 inconvenience fee checks to all of the residents that they can get a hold of? They're offering, here's a little bit of money to help you get through this. Now, of course, you have to know, anytime they're offering you something like this up front, it's going to come with a clause that you're not going to sign on to a class action lawsuit. You're not going to sue them for big money, that there's going to be some liability shields down the road. You know this is how they work. And again, I go back to Trent Conaway's comments. I'm not going to be the country bumpkin that gets rolled over. This is a high poverty area where people are going to jump at this $1,000 because they desperately need it. I don't see anybody going in there going, hey, we need to set up all kinds of abilities for people to stay the hell away from their homes and make sure that they're made whole through the wages that they lose. None of that. I'm sorry, not seeing it. Where's Lauren Boebert? Where's Bill Johnson? Where are the rest of these Republicans who represent these rural areas who are going to get screwed over in this? And that's not even talking about the workers in this. But again, I got taken to task of, you're just blaming Republicans and Donald Trump. And you go, yeah, there's a lot of blame here. There's a lot of blame for Republicans, Trump, and conservative corporate Democrats. There is a lot of blame here that allowed this industry to monopolize, that has privatized, profitized, and silenced the voice of we the people in all of this. And I keep coming back to, it's the belief, it's the ideology. If you can blame anything, and again, we don't know what happened yet. We will get an NTSB report, and we've reached out to our friends over at the BLET, who fortunately sit on that board, and will, when the report comes out, they will come tell us exactly what it is. But I can tell you already what I think it is. It's the fact that this industry has moved to this precision scheduled railroading. Which means, in short, slashing employees, cutting safety, cutting corners, and seeking the most profitable ways to line their pockets. Cut your way to profits. An industry that had thousands, tens of thousands more workers. back when it had thousands fewer cars. We see the report. For miles, this train was evidently on fire. An axle looked like it was on fire. This is what's being reported. And, you know, the sad reality is when you have a 30% cut in the workforce over the last couple of decades, when you have the kind of rush inspections, when you have the kind of waiver system, again, deregulating to the point where corporate America will take care of it. Don't worry, they can police themselves. They'll do what's in their best interest. When bad things happen, are you surprised? And look, it is common that axles heat up. It is common. It's common that axles fail. It's rare that an axle being on fire would cause it to derail. I understand that from the beginning. But here's the thing. This is one of those really weird kind of moments. While this thing was on fire, evidently these trains, the tracks have these end of train fail devices. What used to be known as cabooses, you know, that had people in them that were monitoring things and you know, making sure that, yeah, I don't know, that the flames aren't shooting out of the side of the train. These things fail almost every time. Almost every trip they fail at some point. And the other beautiful part of this, there's no regulation on these. These aren't mandated. They're not regulated. No one's overseeing them. So who knows if they're even on? It's like one of those cute little boxes that has a camera in it that doesn't have a wire leading out of it, that no one knows if it's actually working. This is kind of that. They go, look, we've got the thing. It's like the cleanup after 9/11. They had all those red lights all around the pit that were supposed to go off when the air quality reached a certain level that weren't actually wired up. So all of those people who thought, hey, the lights aren't on, the air quality must be okay, I can breathe in this crap. Sorry. Now, again, I go back to this. For me, the main parts of this are very simple. It's the monopolization. We've got these companies get too big and too powerful and unaccountable. Their lobbying arms are extremely powerful because they've been able to hold off regulations for decades. During the Obama term, they wanted to put a different braking system on. Remember when the oil trains were blowing up all the time or derailing? They wanted a different braking system. They wanted to upgrade that with new technology. Not Civil War era technology, something new. And the first thing the Trump administration did when they came in, wiped it all away. It's this kind of, this hatred of regulation, of oversight, that's caused part of this. Now, as I was talking to people who are in the industry today, I said, what are the big problems? And I said, everyone agreed, it's the waivers. The railroads are giving these regulatory waivers all the time. For instance, if every car is supposed to be, let's just say, car is supposed to be inspected every 1,000 miles or every 5,000 or whatever that number is, the railroad goes, well, we didn't get around to it. Give us a waiver to double or triple. We'll get it next time around. And evidently, these things are coming fast and furious. They own the regulatory body because there's a swinging door between what little regulation there is and the industry. And this is, again, another one of these problems that we've allowed to spring up around us. That in the mild, minor regulations that we do have, there's a swinging door between the industry and the overseers. That has to stop. And as one person told me today, there's this guy, Carl Alexi. He's a Trump appointee who is responsible for all these waivers. And it's basically just pencil whip. Whatever the industry wants, the industry gets. Because, hey, it's bad on business to hold them accountable. It's bad on business to make them do the things that need to be done. And as one person reminded me, it's not about customer service in the rail industry. It's about these metrics that they throw out that the owners of the companies want. It's the bean counters hitting their metrics, hitting their goals. That makes the owners, that makes them happy. And you go, well, who are the owners? Well, everyone today was going, Warren Buffett owns all the railroads. No, he doesn't. He owns BNSF. This was Norfolk Southern. BNSF is out on the West Coast. This is Norfolk Southern. When you fall down into the rabbit hole to see who owns Norfolk Southern, it's a web of private equity groups who are unaccountable to you or me, with lobbying dollars that are just enormous. So again, you look at these disasters, you look at this and you go, who are they going to hold accountable? You know, I go back to the mayor. Who are you going to hold accountable, mayor? Nobody. Because they're shielded from liability and they own a political party and a half. What are you going to do? This is one of those moments where, you know, look, am I happy with how Buttigieg is handling things? No. Do I understand you've got to clean it up before you can find out what happened? Yeah. Should there be much more being done? Yes. But again, this comes back down to how little media coverage this has gotten and how it's not the sexy stuff. We were too busy focused on a woman walking around Congress with a balloon, looking like a furry in her coat. We're too busy listening to the Boberts of the world who are throwing bombs. Instead of going, hey, how do we have a government oversight system that ensures that communities and workers and citizens are safe? So at the end of this, we're going to get some mealy mouth kind of jumbled response out of this. And I said at the very day it happened, I said eventually they're going to try and blame the worker for this, the engineer. They're going to try and blame them for this. But what's really at stake here, what really, in my view, is the problem here, the fact that we've allowed these railroads to consolidate from, 40 in the 80s down to 6 today, that we've allowed them to gut employment to the point to where they're talking about wanting just one person on a train that's 5 miles long, and on a training setup that they want to cut from 16 weeks or 18 weeks down to 6. There's nothing good with saying, here, corporate America, police yourself. It's kind of like, you know, to be honest, it's kind of like saying, here, Rick, have a radar gun. I want you to track speeders, and you're going to have the only radar gun, and giving me a car that'll do 200 miles an hour down the road. What are you going to do? I'm going to do 200 miles an hour down the road because I've got the only radar gun. Same scenario here. They know there's nobody watching, and the ones that are, they know they own. So, Mayor, I wish you the best. I hope you do hold these people accountable. I hope they don't run over another country bumpkin. But I got to tell you, doesn't look good for you. Doesn't look good at all. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Super Bowl on Sunday was entertaining. I enjoyed watching the game. A little disappointed in the ending. I didn't see a holding call. Didn't see it. And I know they got the guy who they called it on to say, yeah, I'm not buying it. That could have been a much more exciting ending to a game than what it was. But it was interesting. But for me, the moment that caught my attention, and look, there was a fun game. I had a wonderful day. He had some incredible food. My wife made just a beautiful spread in best wings she's ever made. Fabulous stuff. But there was a shot where they went from the game up to the boxes to look at the celebrities. You know, you got to see LeBron, you got to see Bradley Cooper, you got to see a whole bunch of people. Because evidently we want to know that our rich and famous are watching football like the rest of us. But they panned over to Elon Musk, because of course, you know, why not? Why not? If he's there, you got to point it out. But he was sitting there with Rupert Murdoch. And it's one of those moments where, you know, my mind goes into these really, really, you know, interesting places. My mother always used to say, you're judged by the company you keep. Because I had some friends she didn't like. And, you know, she was right. Oddly enough, you know, as I tell my kids the exact same thing now. Interesting how that stuff plays out. But, you know, I'm looking at Musk and Murdoch sitting next to each other. Now, you'd go, well, what's the big deal about that, Rick? Well, the big deal about that is Musk bought Twitter under the idea that he was going to open it up and he was going to make it more transparent. And he was going to do all these wonderful things about democracy and free speech and all this stuff. And yet, interestingly enough, all we've really seen him do is attack people that he considers the left or people that he considers, you know, not in line with his thinking. Twitter was a space where left voices had a little bit more power than the right. It's true. Mostly because the right abandoned it. Because they couldn't play by the rules. And this, again, this is what the right does masterfully. If you watched the hearings, listen to Lauren Boebert and her clan going on about how she was shadow banned. She wasn't shadow banned. She violated the rules. They banned her. And then she got out of Twitter jail and came back and did it again. And this is what the right did all the time. So as they weren't following the rules, they were complaining, they're silencing us, playing the victim. Oh, nobody plays the victim like a conservative. Oh, especially a religious zealot conservative. Nobody plays the martyr like that. But to see Murdoch and Musk sitting next to each other, you go, if you're Musk and you're Musk's handlers or your PR people, why would you want that image of, you know, the hero of the right-wing machine being seated next to your guy who's the champion of free speech and the champion of transparency? Why would you want to see, would you do that? Now, look, I've always said, you know, he bought Twitter specifically to destroy what was only a very small advantage for the quote-unquote left or for Democratic voices. And congratulations, he has done that. But you can't now, or you know, my favorite, his ego is the other part of this, fires his engineer because his impressions went down. I mean, wow. I mean, that's one of those wow moments. But again, this idea that the right keeps throwing, this victimization, they're stealing my free speech. And I had someone say, well, what if Elon Musk, you know, blocked you? I go, he has a couple of times. Twitter is, they have blocked us. They have all of our stuff is up. Our impressions are through the roof, all this stuff's up. But the engagement, the mentions, all that stuff, all down. It's because of the way they've changed their algorithms. And this is how you manipulate the system to get the results you want. And this is what Twitter has done and all social media companies have done. But it's not a free speech issue. Because understand, free speech is between you and your government. Now, they are trying to say that there was collusion between the U.S. government and Twitter to silence your voices. And that the stat I love.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him
but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car, he came home, and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false. The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested. True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life, but for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Lows around 30 tonight under clear skies, southerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tomorrow, scattered rain showers likely, high temperatures reach up to 49. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow night, lows level off around 37, cloudy skies expected, about an inch of snow Thursday.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
Currently, it's 32.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Hello, airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today the president put out a nice little infographic about the bridges that they're going to be working on. And you know, I've been over all of those. You know, the Golden Gate Bridge, the one down in Louisiana, that big one, I-10. the one in Kentucky. Lots of these bridges. I mean, we've got, what was the last statistic? 46,000 structurally deficient bridges in this country. 46,000. One of the things that I had said for years, you know, back in 2012, Republicans in the House here in Pennsylvania, they voted on a resolution to make 2012 the year of the Bible. And I was like, you know, I don't disagree with that. I mean, there are a lot of people praying. This is 2012. I mean, we're talking over a decade ago. I said, you know, I don't disagree with that. A lot of people are praying. They're praying that they're going to get from one side of the bridge to the other without it collapsing. And are you surprised? The answer is no. We haven't done anything really since. And look, you know, during the Obama years, there was lots of talk about shovel-ready projects, and they did some. But finally, you've got an administration that got a big piece of legislation, a historic piece of legislation moved that's going to help fix some of these. Again, not all of them. We have 46,000 structurally deficient bridges. Some of them over 50 years old. And you go, you know, some of them need some upgrades, need some repairs, some looking into. And it's interesting to me to watch as it's rare that I get into the comments, but I saw the president's post and I go, let's see what people are saying. Let's see what the troll machine is throwing out. And it's interesting that the folks on the right think that, you know, our infrastructure is perfect, that it's a waste of money, that we shouldn't be spending money on infrastructure. That very bizarre kind of world we're in. In that it comes down to who's in office. Now, I go back to, I had someone ask me about, you know, about Trump, and I said, you know, it was one of the things that I agreed with on Trump. I agreed that, you know, infrastructure, I agreed manufacturing, I agreed China. I agreed with Trump on some major issues that were an opportunity, and I think Democrats would have come along had they had a plan. I remember every week was infrastructure week, and there was always some display at the White House, some pomp and circumstance, some photo op, him playing with trucks or shovels or out in the backyard with bricks or whatever. But no policy, no legislation, no movement. And I said, look, again, I agreed with him on these things. You know, this is how politics are supposed to work. The things we agree on, we move on. It's interesting to me that we didn't get as many Republicans to sign on to that infrastructure legislation as I would hope. It's incredible to me. And it comes down to policy after policy. There are places where the right and the left can come together and agree on things. Back when the Tea Party, you know, sprung up, I was telling my labor friends, you've got to get involved in this Tea Party movement, because the underlying current of what they're screaming about is right. It's your message. You know, Trump basically took Bernie Sanders' message and add a little sprinkle of this, a little sprinkle of hatred, a little sprinkle of misogyny, a little sprinkle of grabber by the you-know-what, and made it his own. But that was labor's message for years. Infrastructure, manufacturing, China, all of that stuff, trade, bad trade deals, all of that was in their wheelhouse. So there was an opportunity to come together and use that moment to solve some real problems for working people. But again, we're not allowed to solve real problems for working people. It's those problems that keep us exploitable. It's those problems that keep us at each other instead of at the very wealthy, getting the pitchforks going after the very wealthy. And the wealthy understand this. They understand as long as we're fighting over balloons, as long as we're fighting over stove troopers, as long as we're pointing fingers at each other and going, yo, 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 we're not looking at them. So I see that there's a trade agreement, a trade deal that may be coming down the pike. The Indo-Pacific Economic Framework trade deal, the IPEF, they are calling it. And I'll tell you, when these trade deals pop up, I'm always looking at them with a jaundiced eye. I'm always looking at them sideways going, yeah, the last ones haven't worked out very well. Now, I do understand that we do need to figure out how to come together on trade issues. We do need to figure out some mechanisms for things to actually be traded instead of just buying cheap stuff from overseas and shipping it back in here. There've got to be some things where we say there are baselines. And also, again, China has has done something masterful. They have basically, in the 4 years that Trump did not play in the international sphere, the Chinese filled the void. They bought up minerals across the globe. They bought up governments across the globe. They bought systems across the globe. They've invested in places where we didn't. And it's going to be a little bit more interesting. These trade deals, like it or not, are how we used to do diplomacy. You know, George Carlin always did a funny bit on, you know, on Vietnam. You know why we're there in Vietnam. And you go, nobody was supposed to know. He goes, you know, to free those people and give them industry, U.S. industry, because those are the two middle letters of the word industry, U.S. And he wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong that we were just going around the world looking for exploitable cheap labor and have been doing it for decades. So when I look at this, I go, is this more of that? Or is this an opportunity to raise standards? Is this an opportunity to ensure that the products that we use, whether it's cell phones or T-shirts, aren't made by child labor or slave labor? To ensure that we don't have, you know, environments where the reason corporate America goes there is because they can dump all over our environment, you know, without the care of causing any undue harm to their bottom line. There's a lot here. And, you know, the idea being that I'll be honest, I'm not thrilled that Democrats are part of this. I'm not thrilled that Republicans are part of it. I wish working people were at the heart of this. You know, I had someone remind me today that, you know, Joe Biden was, you know, part of the whole push to NAFTA and how Donald Trump was against NAFTA. And I'm going, oh, I don't know how he was back during in the 90s. I don't know what his position was. And I don't think he did. In fact, you know, all I know is he made a lot of ties and a lot of stuff in China. If you ever watched the David Letterman video, yeah, right there. But my problem is Democrats, to a part, have been just as bad on trade as Republicans. Am I hopeful that Joe Biden has seen the light and pushing back on some of the neoliberalism that hasn't worked over the last 40 years, pushing back on the supply side voodoo Reaganomic and moving us maybe in a direction that's going to open up trade lanes and make lives better on both sides of the border? We'll see. I'm hopeful. But I was reminded today that it was Donald Trump that got rid of the investor state dispute settlement in NAFTA. And I said, yeah, that is a great thing. And why did that happen? That happened because the labor movement fought heavily for it. They fought heavily for getting included in this agreement because of Democratic votes. An increased minimum wage on auto workers in Mexico, the right to unionize in Mexico. They got a lot of things in there that, honestly, no Republican would have ever stood for. So in that vein, Trump did something right. And it was because you had a labor movement using the Democrats to push the agenda of working people. So I'm looking at this moment and I'm going, is there a way that we can ensure that there are protections in place that we don't deal with trade agreements with countries that still allow union assassinations? You know, like Colombia. We've got a trade agreement with Colombia where they literally take trade unionists up in planes and throw them out. Where there have been stories over the years of trade unionists being shot in the head, pulled off buses and being shot in the head. You can't have trade deals with those people. And if you do, there's got to be a mechanism to hold someone accountable. We can't deal with countries that are heavily into human trafficking and forced labor and child labor and all of that stuff. So as I understand right now, there's a push to get the Biden administration to sign on to some certain things that are going to make sure that we get those labor rights, we get environmental rights, we help use this as a driver to deal with climate change, to deal with digital trade and the future issues that are coming up. Digital trade is a huge thing. There's no real framework on what that looks like. So I'm at this moment where the hope is with Biden, who is, in my view, still the most pro-union president in my lifetime. that this is going to be front and center, that ensuring that American workers are protected, that provisions for Buy American are allowed, or, you know, for domestic, I shouldn't say Buy American, I should say domestic production for domestic consumption. Because, you know, I don't really care if the UK or Germany or anyone, you know, if you're buying stuff to use in your government, to use in your procurement, it should be made in your backyard. I think we need to move back to an era where this idea of open trade borders, meaning we're gonna have one country manufacture all of our stuff, and hopefully it'll be cheap and we'll exploit labor there, and then we can all live off. I think we have to go back to the idea of domestic production for domestic consumption, where we start making the stuff we need. We haven't thought that way in a long time. I know that's old school. That's our grandparents' generation. Yeah, and look how well they did. So we'll see. I'm anxious. I'm interested. I'm guardedly optimistic, but also concerned, because another one of these trade deals could be the undoing of working people, and that's part of the worry. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. What labor union would you say has the coolest name? The Sons of Vulcan would most certainly have to be in the running. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1865. That was the day the Sons of Vulcan ended their 8-month strike and won a union contract. The Vulcans were skilled steelworkers. Many were immigrants from England, Scotland, and Wales. They worked at puddling, the process by which carbon was burnt off of molten iron in order to form steel. It was tough work that required physical strength, skill, and experience. The Vulcans first formed in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1858. A skilled trade union, only puddlers were eligible to join. They called their locals forges. They took their name, Vulcan, from the Roman god of fire and volcanoes. With the ongoing Civil War, the demand for steel grew. The work of the Vulcans was vital to the union's war effort. But as the Civil War drew to a close, puddlers' wages were threatened. The Vulcans declared a national strike. The strike wore on for 8 months. Finally, the industry leaders agreed to the workers' demands. The Vulcans won wage increases tied to industry profits, as well as union recognition. With this victory, the Vulcans' membership grew. By 1873, the number of Vulcans had topped 3,000 members. Unfortunately, that year saw a major economic panic sweep across the United States. The economic crisis took a toll on union membership. Another downfall of the union was their policy not to admit black members. This meant that employers could hire black labor in an effort to undermine the union. By 1876, the Vulcans had merged with other steel unions to form the Amalgamated Association of Iron and Steel Workers. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
They love the children. They love the children. Care about the children. Care about the children an awful lot. In fact, they care about the children so much out there in Wyoming. They're going to make sure that they can get married whenever they want. Evidently, the Republican Party is seeking to kill a bill that evidently it was working its way through the state legislature that would have raised the state's minimum age to get married to a whopping age of 16. Their argument is, well, you know, if you put an arbitrary age on something, it's gonna interfere on parental rights and religious liberty. Seriously? That's the argument? That's the argument. Everything's gonna come back to parental rights and religious liberty. Everything. you know, Nazi homeschooling, parents' rights, religious liberty, allowing 12-year-olds to marry who knows. It's insane. But it's religious liberty. And eventually we're going to get to that point. And I've always said that the fight over making this a Christian country is going to be interesting once we've staked the flag in the ground. You've got the dove flag out there next to the American flag. And we're solidly Christian country. The fun will be once the religious sects begin eating each other. And then we'll see just how bizarre these folks really are. Now, look, I've said this before, and I know my religious friends are going to, you're talking bad about religion. No, I'm not talking about the sane, rational people who are good, decent, honest people. I'm talking about these crazy people. I'm talking about people who go, no, we can't have this onerous law that says a 16-year-old can't get married without, it's insane. Literally nuts. But there you have it. Now, it doesn't stop there. You know, and look, in this country, the move, unfortunately, seems to be putting women, girls, mostly girls, back in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant. It seems more about control and power of their everyday lives. And I point to Virginia, where evidently the Youngkin administration is advocating this idea that law enforcement should be able to check your daughter's menstrual cycles on their little apps. Now, again, as a parent, I don't know, and I actually don't know if my daughters use these. It's not my business to know, but I've advocated for them to not. Maybe go old school with a calendar. We'll get you a paper calendar. Because what they're advocating for in Virginia, this is scary stuff, is to allow law enforcement to use these apps, the information off of these apps. And they've actually proposed a budget that would earmark and put money for prosecuting and imprisoning women and doctors who receive and perform abortions. I mean, this is invasive stuff. Now, remember, these are the people who told us that they're the party of individual liberty. They're the party of small, less intrusive government. That they're the party of get out of our lives, except I guess if you're a teenage girl. This is the weird kind of moment that we're in. And what's amazing to me is there are still women who vote for this kind of stuff. Now, the argument is, if we allow this kind of exemption, if we allow women to be able to use these apps to track their thing, it would be a slippery slope. It'd be a problematic standard and potentially lead to more of us not being able to track what women do. And my thought was, look, I guess I'm old because I still remember, you know, the idea that we should have the right to privacy. You know, in our persons, in our papers? Am I the only one who still thinks this way? Now, I know. Technically, the phone is not paper. Because this is how conservatives think. If it's not enumerated, if the founding fathers didn't say that you have the right to privacy in your cell phones and your digital documents, it doesn't exist. This is the thinking. Because this is what they tell me all the time. Well, that's not written exactly the way you said it was. No, because the founders would have had no idea of a woman's menstrual cycle, let alone an app that would be tracking it. But here we are. And this is, again, one of these moments. You know, how can they get away with this? They can because, well, they're the party of smaller, less intrusive government. They're just not intruding on, well, you right now. And then, again, I come back to this moment of what is up and what is down. For instance, the whole Social Security fight. I'm still getting people saying, see, Rick, the Republicans never wanted to destroy Social Security. And I'm going, what? They've only been wanting to destroy Social Security since it was proposed. Paul Krugman had an interesting article where he walks through this. And he said, look, the reality is Republicans, you know, have been trying to make deep cuts in Social Security every time they see that there's a political window to do it. Every time they see this chance, they jump at it. And then when, you know, people get outraged, when Granny goes, I'm getting my cane to beat you. They go, no, it's Democrats. Just Democrats are smearing us. Democrats are making us look bad. No, this is, as I said over the weekend on our podcast, this is one of those moments of how dare you hold me accountable for those things that I said. But this is where we are. And I keep coming back to that, I think it was Maya Angelou who said, you know, if someone tells you who they are, believe them. When do we believe them? Answer, probably never. Because, interestingly enough, most recent analysis of Congress, and this is one of those interesting things. It's one of those weird kind of those weird stories. Because, you know, people say, well, you know, country's gotten much more extreme because of gerrymandering and because of, you know, the extremism and all this. Well, what this most recent study finds out is it's true. In Democratic districts that are gerrymandered or are safe, quote unquote, safe districts, the wants and needs of the people being heard in ways makes those representatives a little more willing to go out the extreme and start demanding things, you know, like paid sick leave, you know, like maternal leave, you know, like health care for everyone, you know, like child care for families so that, you know, if both parents have to work, they can afford it, you know. Those really hippie, liberal, socialist, commie things. And what they found on the other side, because you go, well, then, you know, if it's true on the left, it's got to be true on the right. What they found is that the most gerrymandered districts weren't any more extreme than any of the other districts. They're finding the entire freaking Republican Party is off its rocker and has gone completely off the deep end. So it's not just, you know, the districts that feel safe where people are feel emboldened to say, hey, there are things that we want and need, and this is our ideology, the entire Republican Party. And I go back to the reality is the Republican Party is bought and paid for. The moneyed interests own the Republican Party. I've asked for 18 years, show me a piece of legislation that a Republican has dreamt up, proposed, passed, and gotten signed that sole purpose is to help working people. And in 18 years, nothing. Because there is nothing. Because after all, Republicans hate working people. Look at their policies. Whereas you look at some of the left, you know, their push may be a little even more uncomfortable than I'm with and may go, you know, hey, obviously you're not into winning. But at least they're pushing ideas that are helping working families. The basic tenet of the Democratic Party right now is, you know, how do we get a system where people can rise up, where a job does give people the ability to support themselves, support their families. The idea of bread, yes, but roses too. The idea that a job should be more than just basically making ends meet, that it should make lives better. But here again, we're in this one of these moments where the megaphone keeps throwing out these messages that a lot of my working class friends have bought into because it's all they hear. And then feel defensive every time the Republicans flip on this switch to say, oh, see.
Mama, what does the chicken say?
Chicken. Oh, okay.
And a wolf?
Oh, a wolf.
What about the tiny dog? Cat.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Dolphin? What does the turkey say? Whale.
Whale sound.
Do the giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Okay. Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right.
just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5.